Room Pod, part of the White Dragon Podcast Network. Hey, all you pet stylists. You found the Groom Pod. Welcome to our virtual salon. My name is Susie, and I'll be your host. I'm a mobile groomer from Seattle, Washington, and anyone who knows me will tell you I love to talk, especially about my job. One of my favorite people to talk to is my friend and mentor and star of the show from groomblog.blogspot.com, Miss Barbara Bird.
Hi, groomers.
How are you?
I'm doing great.
Well, I just got back from a two-day miniature vacation down to the land of roller coasters, and I myself am extremely rested, so I'm ready to roll today. I just want to remind everybody to be part of the discussion group. Search The Groom Pod on Facebook, and if you'd like to email me, you can do so at Susie, S-U-S-Y, Susie at thegroompod.com, and you can email Barbara at Barbara at thegroompod.com. So, anything exciting happened this week?
Well, I did have a kind of an event yesterday that I'd like to share, because I sent a dog home unfinished yesterday.
Oh, boy. What happened?
Well, what happened was this is an older Scotty. Scooter is about 9 or 10. He's been rehomed several times, and I've been grooming him for about the last 4 years. He's found his forever home, but they've been kind of letting him get overweight. Ooh. And the way that it works in my shop is that my bather and assistant, Yvonne, opens up the shop and takes in the first couple of dogs and starts bathing. And then I casually drift in about an hour later, pick up my share of the work and start finishing. So I drifted into the shop, and Yvonne told me that Scooter was there and he'd been bathed and he was ready for me, and that Scooter's owner has finally admitted that he's too fat. So I thought that was a good thing, because I've been working with this guy for like 2 years trying to tell him to lay off the food, and he's one of these men. He's a lawyer, you know, so he's really firm-minded, and his response is that he feeds what the food package says to feed, so it can't be wrong. And meanwhile, his dog is just like getting fatter and fatter. So I went to groom Scooter, and I noticed that he had a very heavy breathing, labored breathing. And when he stood up for me and I saw him, it wasn't just that he was fat as usual, but his whole abdomen was swollen and bloated.
Oh, no.
And I immediately got concerned, and I just didn't think, I thought it was an urgent situation that he go to the vet. And even though he might have made it through a grooming, I didn't want to do it. And I wanted to make a point, I wanted to get him seen on a Saturday, so I wanted to get him out of the shop before noon so that he could go to a vet. And I called his owner and said, you know, he's got a swollen abdomen, it's not just fat, and he's breathing labored, and that's a sign, could be a heart problem, and I don't want to work on him until he's seen. And he picked the ball right up and got Scooter out of there and off to the vet. And Scooter took some testing and stuff. But, you know, it's a hard call to know when to alarm a client about a medical condition.
Since I've always had a vet beside me until I went mobile, I really used that security blanket. I loved it. I love to be able to walk into the next room and say, hey, this dog doesn't look right. That's one of the things that's pretty uncomfortable about mobile grooming, is I've got no backup. If I've got to go somewhere, I have to run in, tell the client, put the dog in the carrier, drive to the vet, which I have a vet in every area that I work that knows me and that I can walk into. But it's really intimidating not to have one in the next room, since that's how I learned how to groom.
Yeah, well, good point. Well, I've never had that luxury. So, you know, I don't like to, and I always say, you know, I'm not a vet, not qualified, but my gut tells me that something is way wrong here with Scooter, and that he probably shouldn't go through the weekend without being seen. I was really afraid for him, and I still am. And I called the client after dinner last night, and he said that I'd done the right thing. The vet said I'd done the right thing, and that they did a number of tests, and it could either be heart problem or something worse.
It's always better to err on the side of caution with these things. You don't ever want to have something happen at your shop that's like a medical emergency, and then you end up feeling responsible for it. I think that would be really difficult for both the groomer and the owner, and there could be lawsuits involved. And yeah, always err on the side of caution.
I agree, and that's what I did, and I feel real good about it, and thanks for letting me share.
Yeah, definitely. That's an important topic there. All right, well, let's do a little bit of news. Now it's time for the news, sponsored by Groomer to Groomer Magazine and Barkley Productions. So did you get your Groomer to Groomer magazine yet?
No, I didn't. What? I'm on the end of the mailing list. What's up?
So there's a really nice looking Asian fusion groom on the front, and a nice article inside written by Reza Wisnam, and I probably completely messed that name up.
Oh, Reza's way cool. I follow her on Facebook.
Oh, excellent. Well, she did a really good description of it. She says, Asian styling is a creative grooming method that invokes a sense of whimsy in its pursuit to make the dog look like a stuffed toy. Is that right?
That's an interesting way to put it. Yeah, there's an emphasis on cuteness.
Yeah, I think especially the dog on the cover, it looks like it'd probably be best tailored to smaller dogs.
It is. It's much easier to do on smaller dogs, and on it works really well on Yorkies, Maltese, Shih Tzu, Bichons, little poodles.
So drop coats and also curly coats.
A major focal point is the real muffy round muzzle.
Oh, the little mustaches, the donut mustache.
The little old donut mustache like we used to do on poodles, only even more so. There's kind of an exaggerated element to Asian fusion grooming. And Asian styles are often even more exaggerated. The fusion comes, a groomer in Scotland, Pammy Carmichael Hogue, coined the term Asian fusion, which is like a combination of Asian styling elements and our traditional pet grooming.
It looks like the dogs often sport some serious bell bottoms.
Bell bottoms are a trend in that style, yeah, yeah.
I'm not a good blender up there by the elbows, but it looks like they're blending a little bit above the elbow so that it's a cool look. I like it.
Well,
I'm going to have to
try it. The body is tight. The body's very tight, often even like a 7-blade or a 5-blade, and then with these belled legs. And in Asia, the huge trend is dressing the dogs.
Right.
So it makes sense when you're putting clothing on the dogs to have the body hair be short and then the legs stick out from the garment. You know, so it all makes sense if you do it with the mind that that's how it originated. I did my Bichon Belle in an Asian fusion style a few weeks ago, and I left her whole butt area really large, what I call the Kardashian butt. And then I put the little dress with a ruffle on it on her, and her little Bichon buns stick out from underneath her dress, and it's so darling, it's so cute. But that groom doesn't make a whole lot of sense when you see her without her clothing. I'm totally crazy about Asian fusion, and if I had to say what's one thing that's changed in my grooming the most in the last couple of years, it would be that I've picked up on the trend towards utilizing some elements of Asian fusion. It's a lot of fun, and it's outside the box, and it's creative. And
it looks to me like they have pretty tight cheeks on their face. Is that true as well?
Well, that's an option, and that's one way that you get to the exaggerated puffy, muffy muzzle that makes it look like a stuffed animal, you know.
What about the ears?
Ears are sometimes very short, sometimes long, with ponytails. Sometimes they're shaved. Sometimes they're short and scissored into sort of like earmuffs. Sometimes the crown of the head is taken down lower than the ears, so then it really looks like earmuffs. See, there's a lot of choices.
I like that.
You know, and then also you can go the other route and do ponytails and, you know, tied up top knots and everything. I love tied up top knots myself.
I happen to wear one.
And you look really cute.
Oh, yay. So oftentimes they use a little bit of color in there as well, right?
Color is another added feature. Yeah, the Asians are crazy about color. And so it's not color like our creative grooming where you're using color to make new forms in the hair, but it's accents, you know, like the ends of the ears, the paws, a dash here and there.
Have you found your clients to be receptive to this type of grooming?
Well, yeah. My clients love it. I've done a number of kind of Bichon poodle mixes in an Asian style, kind of what Pammy calls a peanut-shaped head. And it doesn't have to be shaved super close to the cheeks. You can just, as long as it's indented, it makes for an easier to care for face. And it's really cute. So some of my clients like that. And those who are like to give me license to be artistic, they go along with it. And if they don't like it, we grow it out and do something else. You know, some clients are flexible. You know, there are other clients that want the very same haircut for the life of the dog, and you better not change it.
Well, I hope to catch up on an Asian fusion class here somewhere along the line. I definitely like the look. That's really it for the news. So let's talk a little bit about me.
Oh, it's time to talk about Susie Scott.
So I'm going to let you do this. I'm going to let you do this interview, so have at it.
Okay, so Susie, where did you grow up?
So I grew up in Seattle. I was born in California, but it was merely convenience for my mom to go down there to be with my grandparents when I was popped out. But I've lived in Seattle all my life.
So that kind of happened to me, too, that I was born in California, but it was just kind of by circumstance rather than, you know, my folks just happened to be living there for a little while.
Yep, I consider myself a native here in Seattle. I'm one of the few left.
So did you have, did your family have pets? Is that where you got your love of animals?
We did. My mom was a cat person, so we always had a cat or two at the house. And I had difficulty sleeping as a kid, so my mom let me have a fish tank in my room, and I thought that was pretty cool. So we had the cats and the fish tank. And then about when I was 6 or 7 years old, one of the neighbor dogs moved into our house. And the people would go to work, and they would let the dog out back in the day when you could just let your dog out all day. And the dog would come up and spend the entire day at our house, and then about 5 o'clock, she'd head out the door and head back down to their house.
That's cute.
I knew it. And they finally gave her to us, and she became my first veterinary patient. I used to dress her up in bandages and do all kinds of procedures on her. And basically, she was my best friend, and I knew that I loved dogs, and I always wanted to have a dog in my life.
Wow, you know what I played with our dog? I played animal trainer.
Oh, nice.
I did. I took our boxer, and I put a big ruffled collar on him, and I taught him these kind of lion tricks, like lie down and roll over and stand on the box and, you know, shake hands and that kind of stuff. And so I played animal trainer with our dogs. Isn't it funny the way that we grew up?
I've got a picture of the Weimaraner with her feet playing the piano, standing up on her hind legs, and she's wearing a hat and goggles.
How cute. So how did you get into grooming?
Well, I had a parrot who had gotten sick, And I was in the vet's office with her twice a week, thanks to my dad paying the bill. And I lost my job and the bird on the same day. And I was a little forlorn, and I thought, what in the world can I do for my next career? And I realized that I had a lot of receptionist skills, and I certainly liked hanging out at the vet. So I went up there and I applied for the receptionist job, and I got it. And that's how I got in the veterinary world. And then I was a little bit bored of the reception job, and it was really difficult for me to answer the phone when I know a pet had passed away in the back and I wasn't allowed to tell the person. And I did a lot of crying, and all the animals I bonded with were the animals that were the sickest, because they were the ones that came in the vet most often. So I was searching for a better spot to be in the veterinary industry. And one day I took our, I'd call her an adequate groomer, to the bank to cash her paycheck, because she didn't have a car. And her check was twice what mine was, and she was leaving at 2 p.m, and she never had to deal with the sadness. And I thought, huh, I could do that. And I asked her if she could train me on my days off, and she said yes. So I went out and bought some equipment, and I started to do dogs with her on my days off, and then ask all my neighbors if I could start grooming their dogs. And so I had enough equipment to do in-home grooming. I had collected up that much stuff, and I started grooming dogs for free in people's houses to learn. And then, luckily or unluckily, the vet hospital I was working at was bought out by a corporation, and their handbook said no competing businesses at home. And I thought, uh-oh, I better disclose. So I called up the corporate office and I said, I know you guys don't want people doing competing businesses at home, but I'm trying to learn how to groom dogs, so I'm going to groom dogs at home, and I wanted to just let you guys know. 2 weeks after that, they called me and offered me a fully paid training position with a girl at a really high-end hospital who had just come out of the Nash Academy. And she had talent before she went in the Nash Academy. Wow. So I started to work over there with her, and there was another groomer in the office there as well. And I worked with her for a full year one-on-one, and I learned the Nash method from her. And that's kind of how I got into grooming.
That's cool. So then you did go on and become certified, right?
Yeah, I sure did. I went to, let's see, I met our local vendor, and he told me about a grooming show, and I went out to the grooming show, and it was just Marlene and Stasco, and it was just a two-person seminar, and it was one day. It was out at the racetrack, and that's where I met my friend Brandy, and I made a lot of connections in the grooming world that way, and I learned about things like certification and seminars, and I was hooked instantly. I love going to seminars. I like to continue learning, and certification was just one more step in that process. So I am a certified master groomer, and I love having the letters after my name.
And you've also competed in some creative grooming, right?
Yes, I love the showmanship aspect of creative, but I'm only kind of an average groomer, and I have no sculpting talent. So it was working for me before the airbrushing happened. But now that the airbrushing has happened, I pretty much have booted myself right out of the creative ring, and I've taken up rescue grooming. I love the rescue rodeos and the rescue competitions. So even though there's no show to be put on after that, because that was really where I excelled, was the show portion of creative grooming, I don't get to do the show anymore, but I do still get to be on stage and have everybody looking at me, and I love that. You know, me, me, me.
Me too. Me, me, me. Yeah. Love to be in the front of the room. Hate to be in the back.
Yep. So I did end up going mobile after the vet hospital, and I was kind of pushed out the door of the vet hospital because they wanted to hire more groomers, and I personally didn't really want to work with anybody else, so I kind of went out the door that way. But I bought a grooming trailer, paid for it in full, and I adore mobile grooming, and I never, ever, ever want to give mobile grooming up unless I can't drive. Then, of course, I'll probably park the trailer and make people come to me. But mobile grooming is the best. I found my niche, and then, of course, the podcast. The podcast is spectacular.
All right, Susie Scott, there we have you.
Excellent. All right. Well, let's take a little bit of break here and hear from our sponsors, and then we'll be back with our At the Reception Desk segment, which will be greeting a new dog.
We invite you to check out the Bee Bird Shopping Cart at www.shop.beebird.biz. Here we offer selected equipment, tools and products, and BeeBird educational materials. Now featuring the Handy Bathing Beauty and Australian Pro Magic Concentrate, a magic wand and a bottle. Shop with a groomer. It's good karma.
Hey everyone, it's your good pal Kev from the White Dragon Podcast Network, shamelessly interrupting your enjoyment of this tremendous WDPN podcast you're listening to basically shill to you. Bear with me here, folks, this will be brief. I know what you're all thinking. You're loving the tremendous audio spectacle currently delighting your auditory senses, and you're lamenting the fact that the stars of the WDPN are only around for you 1 hour per week, right? Well, you're wrong. We've got a whole slew of shows that will delight, entertain, and captivate you all week long. And the best part is that we've got something for everyone. Are you looking for something your whole family can enjoy? Well, look no further than Two Men and the Mouse, the flagship show of WDPN focusing on the magic and wonder of Walt Disney World. Pete Mandel and myself share our love of the most magical place on Earth as we count down the latest and greatest news of the week before diving deep into a featured topic. Maybe you're a fan of geek TV and movies. You love the worlds established in shows such as Arrow, Gotham, The Flash, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Doctor Who, and so many more. Well, for you, we've got the Geek Watchtower. I'm joined each week by a special guest host as we review the latest installments of our favorite geek-centric media. Sometimes, though, the universe of geek pop culture can be a little too all-consuming and you need to go broad. That's why we've got Bat Squad Radio, hosted by the YouTube comedy trio known as the New Jersey Bat Squad. You'll hear me as Kev L, along with Bat Dave and Spider Denny, detailing the goings-on throughout all of geekdom. Perhaps you're more of a sports entertainment fan. Well, WDPN's got that covered as well. Step inside the world of professional wrestling with Ring Ropes Radio, the all-new pro wrestling podcast of WDPN. Kevin Clark and I present to you all the viewpoints of two 10-plus years veterans of the wrestling business and supplement that with special interviews with the stars of wrestling's past, present, and future. Want more information on where you can find this plethora of internet audio entertainment? Well, head over to Facebook.com/WD Podcast Network and give us a like for all the latest news and new shows and episodes. Okay, I'm all done. I told you it would be quick. Well, this wasn't exactly quick, but whatever. Back to the show. Enjoy it, and thank you for listening to the White Dragon Podcast Network.
Customer service problem? Let's talk about it at the reception desk. So we're going to go over to the reception desk, and we're going to learn about how to greet a new dog. So when I worked at the vet hospital, they were pretty careful about how to greet and walk up to the dogs that come in the door, because you don't know their temperament. And when I started at the vet, I didn't really realize that. So I would just come bounding up to dogs and put my face right up in next to them, and no protocol at all. And then I watched somebody get bit in the face. And boy, you watch that happen once and you will never put your face against a dog again that you don't know. Even some of the ones I do know, I hesitate putting my face right in their face. But one of the things they always told me at the vet hospital is when you walk up, don't make eye contact with the dog right away. Go ahead and put your hand down there and let the dog sniff you first before you reach from the top down on top of the dog.
I agree, totally. And what I do is... I have a counter, so I step through the gate to their side of the counter, and I have two chairs in my little waiting area, and I sit in one of the chairs. The owner still has their dog on the leash. I sit in one chair, the owner sits in the other chair, and that gives me, first of all, it gives me a really comfortable way to meet the people sitting side by side rather than this barrier of the counter between us.
And, very good.
As I'm, you know, and then we just let the dog kind of sniff around while, you know, we talk a little bit about the grooming, and then I gradually put my hand out and let him sniff, and then I'll touch the dog. But definitely no direct eye contact, no face front contact in the beginning. I let them discover me. And if they don't, then I urge the owner to bring the dog over closer to me, and we take it from there. But that gives me it's good for the, I feel it's a real friendly way to greet the people, the new people, as well as the new dogs.
Great point. So I also have a little bit of freeze-dried liver in my pocket so that I smell like a cookie. Because they seem to pick up on that liver smell really well. Another thing I do, especially when you've got mom clutching on to Fluffy as tight as possible, going, it's okay, it's okay. And then they hand the dog over to you and the dog snaps at you. A way to avoid that problem is always take the dogs from the butt first. So have the owner hand you backside of the dog. People will just shove their dog into you, and that's a good way to get bit. And then there you are with a dog up at waist level or even higher, and it bites you, and your response is to drop the dog, and you can't. So that's a tough situation to be in. When the owner brings the dog into the salon from the car, they generally either carry the dog or the dog's on a leash. I never, ever, ever trust the owner's leash. I always carry a slip lead. And a slip lead is one of those skinny, just with a loop on the end. So it's basically tightens around the dog's neck, so there's no way they can back out of it. I've had more dogs back out of the owner's leash without the owner ever realizing it. And the thought of one running down the street as I'm taking it out to the trailer is just a horrible vision.
I had that happen. Ooh.
That's bad. Yep. And you can get those slip leashes cheap, and you can have your name put on them, and then you can, you know, pass them out occasionally. They're less than a dollar. So you lost a dog out the door?
What happened is that the dog came in with its British braided leash. It's high-end leash. And the helper at the time took the dog out on its gear after the dog was groomed. To pee, when it took it outside to pee, and the dog snapped the leash. It was an old English sheepdog. And we're on a busy street. Fortunately, at that time, there was a school zone right there, slowing traffic down to 15 miles an hour. But that old English sheepdog went right out into the four lanes of traffic. And a couple of little university co-eds, girls in a little teeny car, they reached out of the side of the passenger window and caught the dog.
Oh,
and
thank
stayed
goodness.
There until I caught up. I mean, I was a basket case.
Yeah, that's an ugly situation that we want to kind of avoid at all costs.
So that was a horrible way to learn about not trusting the owner's gear. And yep. I agree with you 150%. I have kennel leads that are slip leads. I bought 100 of the rope style for, you know, like practically nothing. I also have the bigger English style ones that are like for my own dogs that I keep. I like slip leads. I keep one in my glove compartment at all times in case I run into a stray dog situation. We also had a dog get out of the car. We provided a pickup and delivery service to a housebound person for a while, and she had three dogs, and my assistant at the time went to get the three dogs and didn't come in and get me to bring them in, and one of those dogs got away. Susie, the dog was gone for 4 days.
Oh, man.
The dog was lost for 4 days. Can you imagine what I went through?
I can't. I can't even imagine in my wildest dreams of losing someone's dog for 4 days.
It was horrible. And so there again, I learned about multiple dog situations.
Yeah.
Yeah. You learn some things the hard way in this, you know. And, you know, see how it seemed, this gray hair? I think that's when this happened. I think this white stuff in the front, I think that's when that happened. That popped right out after that, like holy mackerel.
Right. So the other thing that I'll do in the waiting room that I didn't mention is I'll get down to the dog's level, but I'll be on one knee and I'll have the other knee up, and that other leg will be a border between me and that dog so that I can get up and get away if I need to, and so the dog can't rush at me either. So that's another kind of a handy tip. Down on one knee with the other knee up. And that knee that's up is on the dog side when you go to greet the dog. So just as a recap, let the dog sniff you. Never reach down over the top of the dog. Don't put your face in the dog's face. If the mom has the dog and the death grip, get it from the back end, and always use a slip lead. So there you go.
Good tips.
Let's see what's happening at the grooming table. Now, everyone knows, at least everyone listening to this podcast knows, that grooming is really difficult on your body, and anything we can do to save the bits of our body that we need to groom will keep us working longer. So I asked everybody for their opinion on Facebook, and I also asked Barbara to list a few of her favorite body-saving tools. So why don't you start with one, Barbara? Pick a tool and tell me about it.
Well, I really think it's absolutely essential to have an adjustable table. And I have two. One's an electric table, and that's the table that I sit at. So the button to move that table up and down is right at my foot, and I can sit there. And the other thing is, when you have an adjustable table, hello, adjust it.
Very true.
You know, I mean, it's and really, people with hydraulic tables often put it at one point for the day. You know, your body is going to appreciate it if you have a variety of standing and sitting positions. That would be my second thing, is a stool.
Boy, I haven't figured out the stool thing. When I had my knee surgery done a few years ago, and I took a stool with me in the grooming table, and all I managed to do was move it around so it was out of my way the whole day. I'd stick it over here, I'd stick it over there. I'd sit while I was drying, but I haven't actually learned. It's still a little bit of a gymnastics event for me to groom. So I haven't quite learned this. Actually, if I could stand while I was driving, I probably would stand while I was driving, but I haven't figured that out.
But this is the thing. When you're mobile and you're driving, you have some sitting incorporated into your day. That's good. You know, they say the important they.
Yes.
You know, the experts say that a combination of sitting and standing, to do either sitting all day or standing all day, is hard on your back. But what your back appreciates the most is a combination of those two things.
That's good to know.
But I found after I turned 60, my body kind of forced me into a position of having to sit.
Yeah, and I'm sure that'll come for me as well.
Yeah.
So when I bought my grooming trailer, I bought it from someone who built it from scratch. And they had fixed tables. They had two different sizes of fixed tables, but I had them redo it. I had them cut out the fixed tables, and I had them adapt it for my hydraulic table, because I do move my table all the time. I adjust it. It's the only thing I can adjust. And I can't imagine having groomed without it. And they thought I was absolutely crazy. They said, oh, but you can walk your dog right over to the tub, and you've got two different heights. And I said, my dogs come in more than two different heights. Yes.
Good.
And I also... I do use my hydraulic table, but one of the things that I really appreciate is my hand V lips system, my linked interval positioning
Me
system.
Too.
And I can't groom without it. And part of that, I know you have one as well. And the hip straps and the table divider and all the different positions to use make it so much easier on my hands, so I'm not fighting with the dogs nearly as much.
The hip straps, to have a way to keep that rear end up in the air, standing with the dog, and not having to constantly be re-standing a sitting or lying down dog, makes a huge, huge difference.
And for me, the table divider is absolutely essential. Since most of my dogs, I have to be able to lift them into my bathtub, so I'm doing mostly dogs under 100 pounds. Well, you know, they're 100 pounds. I say 70 pounds, but, you know, some of them, the owners have a little bit different idea of what their dog weighs. But I can lift easily 70 pounds, but I don't like to. So most of my dogs are little, and my grooming table is fixed to the floor. It's bolted down. So if the dogs should choose to, they could back all the way to that far end of the corner, and I have to lean over the table to reach them. But with the table divider, they're kept right up front, and they know that edge is right there, and so they hold a little bit more still just because they don't want to step off the edge. Plus, I have them in the hip strap and the noose on the neck and then connected in the front, and they can't really go anywhere. But it makes it a lot less stress on my back because I'm not leaning over the top of the table. So give me another one, Barbara.
The Handy Bathing Beauty Recirculating Bathing System.
Oh, yeah. I've got one as well.
It saves time at the tub, and it also saves your hand from all of that squeezing and massaging action. You know, all of this all of that working shampoo products through your hands is repetitive stress. And the Bathing Beauty spray does it all for you. So there's very little scrubbing or rubbing that you have to do on the coat unless you have, you know, like filthy feet that you need to hand wash. It's really a hand saver, and your hands are your money.
Speaking about your hands, how about moisture magnets or those chamois towels?
I cannot use them.
You don't use them?
I can't. I can't squeeze them.
Ah, I don't squeeze them. I just use another one. I get it all nice and wet, and then I pretty much soak it all up because I've got basal joint arthritis. I have arthritis at the base of my thumbs, so I can't squeeze them either. And I know there's a wringer out there, but I'm not going to mess with the wringer. But I do use it to mop up because they're easier for me to manage than a big towel. And that, so I wash a few more than I probably would. I'm only doing 6 or 7 dogs a day, so it's no big deal for me to have extra towels. But they're so much smaller and easier for me to manage with my stupid thumbs. So we've got the hydraulic table, the lip system. We should throw in the groomer's helper in there as part of a really nice
training system or a support system. Yeah, the groomer's helper is another option for keeping the dogs from struggling. You know, any way you can reduce the pushing and pulling.
Yeah, and that's definitely hard on our hands that way. So moving a little bit down closer to the floor, I'm going to put out there a vacuum system. Now, it does take a little bit of time to learn how to use a vacuum system like the Clipper Vac or the Taxi Vac, but I do think that in the long run, it helps eliminate some wear and tear on our bodies as far as the actual groom goes. What do you think about that?
I love my vacuum system, and I don't use it on every dog, although I know many groomers do use it on everything, but I use it on big hairy clip downs. I use it on, it works really good with snap-on combs. I use it on golden doodles, and it is what enables me to do really nice golden doodle work at my age.
Yes.
And I like it. But speaking of closer to the feet, I think an extremely important item is fatigue matting and shoe wear.
Oh, you're
because
so
the
right.
Stress starts from the bottom and works up. You know, like I have a concrete floor in my shop. I went 17 years without any kind of insulation on my feet, and I am paying for it now.
I've got completely flat feet, so I have 3 different pairs of tennis shoes, and they are all very expensive tennis shoes, and they're meant for running or trail work. And then I have those plastic orthotics that have been molded for my feet. I've got those in there, and then I'm standing on double floor mats because my feet, my ankles just roll in, and it's really painful. I probably couldn't work if I didn't have those floor mats. I probably couldn't stand. But I rotate my shoes because it takes 24, here's a shoe lesson. It takes 24 hours for your shoes to recover after you've worn them for 8 hours. So if you wear the same pair of shoes every day and you put them back on 12 hours later, they're not actually puffed back up and they're not supporting you as well. So by having 3 different pairs of shoes, I rotate through them. I never wear the same pair of shoes 2 days in a row. Mind you, they are the exact same shoes. So I have to find them in different colors, or I have to paint them with nail polish, or I have to make up a little rhyme to remember what the order of the colors are. It gets a little bit difficult in that respect, but my feet are much happier. My podiatrist told me that that was the way to go, and I started doing it about 10 years ago, and it really makes a big difference. So I would throw shoes in there definitely on top of those mats.
Right. What do our readers say on our Facebook page. What sort of thing did they add to our list?
Speaking about our readers, thank you guys. We got responses. I'm so happy. I knew you were out there, but it was really exciting. So I asked the question, what tools do you guys use most in your job to save your body? And Bree reports, my chiropractor, LOL. And I'll add to that, I do have a chiropractor as well, mostly for my roller coaster, I get roller coaster neck.
But I forgot to ask you about what is the deal with roller coasters and you?
Oh,
And Disneyland, what is it? You're obsessed, woman.
I am. I think it comes from, I have kind of an engineering mind, and I love the engineering portion of the roller coasters, and I thoroughly enjoy the going down the hill. Going up the hill, not so much. Being on top of the hill, not at all. But going down the hill, I just adore that. And my parents, or my grandfather and grandmother lived in California. They used to take me down to the parks when I was really little. And I guess I still have that in me. And when I got older, I discovered the big roller coasters. And really, that's where my heart stands, is on those big, gigantic roller coasters. And I love them. I love the feeling of them. They're the best.
Okay, so moving right along. Now we know about that. You're crazy.
Yeah, so back over to our, Facebook page, which I just turned off. So my chiropractor, Barters, so I do his dog, he does my back. I suggest bartering. Bartering is really good. Go find yourself a chiropractor or a massage therapist that has a dog and offer to groom the dog in exchange. So Aaron from Chicago writes, I cannot rave enough about my new hydraulic table. The brand isn't exactly important, but the fact that it raises to 51 inches is my saving grace.
She's quite tall.
I suffered back issues, which resulted in physical therapy and a chiropractor in addition to massage therapy. Once I purchased my new table, almost all the signs of back pains vanished within a 2 to 3 week period. I have eliminated all other interventions besides the massage therapy. I will keep doing that. LOL. While researching the tables, I found that you had to spend a little bit more money to get a table that raises that high. I'm sure glad I spent that extra money, and I can see that it has already saved me hundreds, if not thousands, on medical bills. And she says, by the way, I'm 33 and only been grooming for 4 years. And I have to agree with that. I would also add, get one that goes all the way to the floor if you're doing big dogs. So Annette says, as a 55-year-old groomer who has had 3 back surgeries, my dear husband is creating me a table that does exactly what I need it to do, and I will gladly share a video when it's done. I can't wait. So there's another one for the table. Annette says, I sit to groom, and there's never been a table that has allowed enough room for my legs to go underneath the electric boot. How do you deal with that?
Well, I have an Ademco. I have an older Ademco electric table that there's plenty of knee room under there. And then I lower, if necessary, I lower my stool.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So that my knees then go lower. But the Ademco table has always worked for me.
Okay. Well, Annette, try the Ademco table. So Brandy, my friend Brandy, my grooming pal Brandy, says a bi-weekly massage, lifting weights, and stretching. That's the tools that she uses.
those are good practices.
Yes, indeed. Anna says, I cannot part with my groomer's helper. It keeps dogs steady on the table, no spinning. It keeps them from doing the belly flop, also a lifesaver or hand saver for clipping nails on biters. It has a haunch holder. A haunch holder that keeps them standing. It saves your shoulders by not having to hold the dog up. A must-have for any groomer working alone. Maggie says, I've learned to pace myself. It's not worth it over the long run to work myself. Days are important. I sit when I groom, and yoga. Tracy says
yoga,
bathing beauty.
Yoga, good.
Yoga, yeah. Tracy says bathing beauty saved my shoulder from getting surgery. My shoulders and elbows were about to give up, and then I decided to give a bathing beauty a try, and I had no idea how much it was going to be a godsend. Went from getting half my body in the tub washing a Newfoundland Great Pyrenees and being sore by the end of the day to washing those big monsters not breaking a sweat. One-handed. if you don't have a bathing system of some kind, you have no idea what you're missing. Power to the groomers. And our last comments from Muriel. Stainless steel guide combs save all that hand scissoring. Electric lifting with a light saves your back and eyesight. And HV dryers for less brushing on a straight coat. There you go. Thanks a lot to our groomers around the world.
No, but I say hallelujah for Snap-on combs.
Oh,
I learned to groom without them, and I learned to groom without high-velocity dryers. We had to arm dryer and brush dry everything from scratch. And my boss was a breeder and show handler of standard poodles, so you can imagine what that little side job was like. So one of the first things that I did when I went out on my own was discover the tools that I had. I didn't even know about curved scissors. And for me, one of the things that helps me with my hands is choosing the lightest possible tools. I use smaller scissors for smaller jobs. I don't use a heavy 10-inch scissor for everything. I go ahead, I use a 5.5-inch scissor when I'm doing around the face and that. And I find it's just easier to change up and use lighter tools. I use a trimmer wherever I can rather than a full-size clipper. I use a lighter clipper. I can't use Oster clippers, they're too heavy. I use a Labe iClip clipper, which it has an indented body so that it fits my hand well and it's lighter weight. So being aware of the weight of your hand tools, I think, is really important body saving.
I use the Excel 5-speed and it has saved my hands definitely. I also tape my hands every day. I wrap them up and that helps for me, but that's unique to my stupid basal joint arthritis issue. All right. Well, I guess that wraps it up for this week on the Groom Pod, and we'll see you guys next week.
Bye now.
Bye-bye. Well, stylists, it's time to sweep up the hair, clean out the tub, and turn out the lights on another episode of the Groom Pod. Remember to join the discussion group and be part of the show by liking us on Facebook at the Groom Pod. You can find Barbara online at groomblog.blogspot.com and at her shopping site, www.shop.bbird.biz. You can email me at Susie@thegroompod.com or Barbara@thegroompod.com. Please tell all your friends about the show and leave comments and reviews anywhere that you can. And also, please support the sponsors of the show. They make it possible for us to continue on. So on behalf of Barbara Bird and myself, thanks for listening and see you real soon.
This has been a production of the White Dragon Podcast Network. For information on this, as well as our other great podcasts, check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/WD Podcast Network, email us at WDPodcastNetwork@gmail.com, and follow us on Twitter at White Dragon PN.